Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, Leslie M. Scott Jones and David Von Strawn. And now, here's David.
Hello, Charlottesville! It is Sunday. It is 10 o'clock. It is February the 3rd. Happy Groundhog's Day post. What happened? What happened? Does anybody know?
Spring is supposed to be coming.
Shit. You, man.
You know what? I'm just saying.
Hold on. I had to get my FCC face on for a minute.
I was like, ha-ha. Woo. All right.
That was
dodge
close.
That bullet.
Yeah.
Dodge that bullet. Government's back on payroll. So
it all depends on whether Mother Nature stops drinking that Henny.
Word.
About, you know, if it really happens, because, you know, she's been getting a little drunk lately.
She is going in and on the Henny.
Right,
it'd be like 65, 15,
and the next day, negative 20.
Negative
like,
5, 2, 46,
it's like,
47,
baby girl, stop
5.
Bending the elbow, like, damn.
No, no. Gas break.
I think she's learning how to drive shift right now.
She's
driving automatic, though.
That might be it.
No.
Father Time is like, no, you got to drive the truck.
If you pick it up when you're a kid, it's easy, but it's hard when you get older. I'm just saying. I know the struggle. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strone, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Little guy, hairy feet. Trying to get through the darkness.
You know, your feet aren't that hairy, David. I've seen
them. Hashtag Trump's America. Well, I've been cleaning them up.
They're not that hairy.
I've been cleaning them up.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. Cleaning them up? How you been cleaning them up?
You know, just a little mani.
You know what? I don't want to know. That's
lotion.
That's some personal information.
You know,
I don't need
extra
to know
love.
That.
And with me, as always, is the lovely, the loquacious, the lascivious Leslie M. Scott Jones.
What's up?
Hey.
What's up?
Hey.
I feel like I'm going to see a lot of you.
You are going to see a lot of me.
In the near future.
You're going to see a lot of me, and I'm going to be panting and sweating and
don't
angry.
Don't say that. Hold on. Wait. Somebody is going to get the wrong idea. Stop.
Yeah, this kind of sounds weird the way I put it out.
It did sound a little weird. The way you put that.
Leslie's directing a play about boxing. And I'm
yes.
Playing
he's playing
a boxer.
I'm directing him. He's playing a boxer. That's the pants.
So it's not what
sweating.
You think.
Get your minds out the gutter.
Dirty
look,
mofos.
Look at you. Man.
Jeez.
So what? I get my.
Go ahead. Speak
I get,
on it.
I get my grandson
executive
later
producer,
tonight.
Asian, I see. Clinton Johnson in the house. Thank you.
I get my grandson later tonight.
Oh. Cherub of Justice.
Yes.
Matthias.
Until Wednesday, I'm so
Daywalker,
excited.
As I like to call him, because he got silver eyes. He got them Riddick eyes.
He really does. He really does. And when he like locks onto you with them, it's just like, ooh, I can't do anything right. But look at you. You're okay. So beautiful.
All right, because this can get out of hand. Leslie is new Mimi, so our entire banter session can turn into look how cute my grandson is. But
he is.
Let's move on to new matters. We kind of touched on Ralph Northam in the pregame. If you want to catch it on Facebook, you can.
Right.
So yeah, we said some stuff on Ralph Northam and the Democratic candidates of 2020. But we're gonna get to our guest right now. This is Peter Gunter.
Yes, Peter Gunter.
Peter Gunter.
Can you hear me? Not, am I speaking
not Gunter?
Loud enough?
Not Gunter.
Not Gunter.
Not Gunter.
Nine.
Not Gunter. He is a playwright. And Jim Winton, he is an actor.
Hey,
I know, Jim.
I'm not really an actor, but. Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yes,
well, if you
act
in mofo, you an actor. So, The Crime Tree going down at Belmont Arts Collaborative. See, I always get that messed up. February 8th through February 16th. I know, it's right there. I see it. It's right there. Thank you guys for coming on to the show, and thank you for being a part of Homegrown.
Yeah, for sure, man. You guys are lit. This is awesome.
I know that the energy is infectious and it's coursing through your veins right now.
Yes, I can see it.
I don't like Jim because I'm usually the hyper guy when I'm around Jim always because he always just tries to play it cool like he ain't got nothing. Like
he's never so excited. Chill, right?
Like he tries to play that coolness all the time.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. No, it's like, just awesome.
Lakers. And then he'll throw some sports in now and then, but most of the time he's like showing with his face in a book. You ain't that cool, mofo. You ain't that cool.
Stop that.
I'm just messing with him. I'm just hating.
We need some black love. I'm just hating on the coolness.
I'm just hating on the coolness.
There's
That's
a lot
all
of coolness
is.
Coming from this
I'm just
corner.
Messing with you. Yeah. I'm just messing with That's you. So I see.
Over here.
I don't know what's going on over there.
So I see why Peter would have casted you in this joint. So talk about Peter. Talk about the Crying Tree. What's it about? What do What should audience members expect in this production?
It goes up, at, as you said, the Belmont Arts Collaborative, February 8th. That's this Friday and runs through the 16th, six performances. The Crying Tree is a story, as it says in the poster, about race and politics in our time and in Jefferson's. That's two periods. So it takes place in two stories, one in 1808, and it's about Jefferson's extended family. And in the present day, and they both deal with race and politics. So it's the, in Jefferson's time, it's his granddaughter is getting married to Charles Bankhead, who in real life was an abusive alcoholic. And you see the seeds of that in this play as she comes to marry him. And in the modern times, Jim here plays a U.S. congressman, newly elected, very idealistic, and he's... He's wants to help impeach the president, and their exchange.
Trump, that is.
But, well, we don't never mention Trump, so you never know. If
but
it's
that's
Trump.
Who it is.
But yes.
Okay.
And so he needs
we just
to
want
get.
To be clear.
He needs to get some independent party votes, and the power broker who's doing that is going to make him exchange some of his socially progressive agenda to deliver three or four independent votes to bring an impeachment about. And it's complicated by the fact that this independent power broker is a notorious, well, perhaps racist. He wrote a book on race-based IQ testing. And so that whole issue comes up between him and his white fiance, his sister, who's a history professor. So it brings up all these issues about race and politics. It's a big stew, but... I think the story speaks for itself. It's not just all the political talk, but there's a it's an interesting drama, and they in both dramas sort of are interwoven, so that actors play double roles in both time periods. So they have to get in and out of period costume every 5 minutes. Mm. So that's a huge challenge. And but you see, I think what's going on, that there's still the racism that's underlies politics is connected still to the racism of slavery 200 years ago. It hasn't quite gone away. So that's it in
so,
a nutshell. If,
so like House of Cards meets Crash is what you're saying.
wow.
That's a whole bunch of stuff. So, it's a, hopefully it's not a car wreck.
Right.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to write this particular story?
Well, this started about 15 or more years ago with the publication of Charles Murray's 1994 book, The Bell Curve, which suggested that blacks were racially inferior because of low IQ tests. And so he had this whole policy agenda that was backed by right-wing ultra-conservative think tanks. That to use this as justification for not increasing social spending to actually to implement cuts. He's a well-known libertarian who believes in unfettered free markets, and he's against all sorts of social welfare programs, against Medicare, all sorts of things. So although this book had the, as I call it, the gloss of science, it really was a piece of propaganda to advance his political agenda. And so I created a character based on him.
So two things.
Yeah.
In hearing all of this, like when you talk about like the bell curve and how this gentleman believed that blacks were inferior, so did Jefferson.
Yes.
In his notes.
Absolutely. And we reference notes on the state of Virginia. in the play, and they make this connection between the bell curve and that. And what
so I guess my question, two questions. I always have such long questions. Is
it really does strap in?
All right, so I'll turn it into one. Is there anything in your research that you found out in the writing of this play that was new to you, and did it reshape the construct of the play from pre to post, from beginning to now?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's been 15 years, so there, a lot of things have happened since then. You know, I've had these some debates with family members about it, and understood sort of how they accepted this book, and that made me even more geared up to write the play and try to understand and deal with those prejudices. One historical event that shaped my thinking was a visit to, now I'm blanking on it, and this is probably because of my cold, and maybe I'll remember it, but there's a there was a Bacon's Rebellion, Bacon's Castle, a trip to Bacon's Castle. Bacon's Rebellion happened in the late 17th century, 1676, I believe, and there the Governor Berkeley was keeping indentured servants from getting land, and so they would work their indentured servitude or hood, and then but they didn't have any access to land, and so they rose up, black and white people, together against Bacon, the status quo at the time, and they formed this coalition of black and white, and they burned down Jamestown and some other plantations, and it was eventually suppressed, but what resulted from that was to restrict access to blacks, but not to whites. So it was a divide and conquer kind of racial strategy that turned a class struggle into a racial struggle. And that has played out, you know, through the slave laws of 1705, and also, and that's sort of the evolution. And for me, everything just clicked. Okay, this is a social construct, you know, not a an inherent difference between the two races, but something that was created by our political system to create a class movement and to challenge the status quo of wealth and keep people down. And that, I think that dynamic is still being played out in today's politics. To the point, and this is referenced in the play, that you get poor white people voting against their economic interests because of these racial strategies in politics.
Right on. So let's turn it over to Jim. Cool Modi.
Yes.
Chilling in the cut. What did when this script was first brought to you, what were your initial responses and what did you learn in taking on the role? And first of all, what role are you playing? Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah. So I met Peter when I was performing at Live Arts for the Christmas event.
Right.
And he mentioned that he had a play going on, and he sent me over the script. I read through the script, and I really liked Carter's character, a congressman, sort of a Barack Obama kind of figure.
Right.
And
I could totally see you, like, working in politics.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
He's
a face.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, being one of those, like, boosters, like, one of those, like, paralegals or whatever that does all the congressman stuff.
Yeah. So totally. I'm not that... One thing I learned from this play is just like all the different information about politics. I'm not I wouldn't consider myself a very political person or involve myself in politics very much. But through my character, I got a chance to just learn about, you know, the different facets of, you know, what's going on. So I think it aligned me to, like, the issues that congressmen have with PAC money and corporations and that sort of thing. So. That's been very informative. And then in terms of my other character, Cato, I mean, I'm very much familiar with the history. So Cato is he's probably 25, 26 years old, and he's an enslaved character in the past story, very familiar with the, you know, history of that, and taking on those emotions is something that's very important for me, given, you know, the history of this country. So I learned a lot about politics. And, you know, got a chance to really live Cato's character. So those two things have been pretty special.
Because, I mean, it's in the DNA. So,
right, exactly.
Like, as long as you can patch into it, like, it's going to be there. Like, it's inherent in people of color,
yes.
no matter what.
Yeah.
So
it's been a great experience. I'm glad I was able to do it, and I think it's going to be good for the community here. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So just full disclosure, David and mm-hmm. Leslie have both played roles of some of these characters in past readings of it. And Clinton,
yeah.
our producer, actually directed an earlier version of this play about 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I want to
mm-hmm.
thank all three of you because this has been a long process. But the input I've had from you and the help you've given me as director and actors has really helped shape this play. It's a very different play than it was even since you both read it about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's been a whole part of this process to hear African-American voices and actors and just from all these different perspectives. And I think the play finally succeeds as drama. Now I hope you all will be there in one of these performances and will have a chance to see for yourself, and particularly to see Jim, because he has a great, he's doing an incredible job. So I think you'll find it fun, too. There's some humor in it, and he just brings all that out.
Yeah.
Jim, I expect my con ticket in the mail very shortly. I mean, like...
He pulled rank on you.
Hey, I mean, I don't make a lot of money, so and the acting I do ain't giving me much.
Hey, it's pay
much.
What you will. So anybody
so please,
can come
pay,
by the way.
Pay me what you will to get in this motherfucker. We're gonna be right back. Peter Gunter, Jim Winton in the house talking about the crying tree. This is Homegrown. Drop.
Hey, this is Winston Hodges, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
17 right, okay. minutes past the hour. Sure. If you're just tuning in, you're listening awesome. To Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Leslie. Clinton on the boards. I always have to do Clinton on the boards last because he puts the whole thing together. Peter Gunther, Jim Winton in the house, The Crying Tree, Belmont's Art Collaborative, February 8th through the 16th. So, Peter.
Yep.
Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
I just see
settle in, folks. Settle in.
I mean, he's a complicated individual.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we just came, we're coming across the 2-year anniversary of when 200 to 300 white supremacists marched into this community and surrounded this man statue as if he was a deity.
Yeah.
An inspiration to their causes and their beliefs. A person who is the architect of a university that has been integral in eugenics. A person that has been, proven to be a womanizer and a rapist. So many facets. And still a genius in some ways, and an architect of this nation. I say again, a complicated individual. And you chose him to be the subject of this piece.
He's not actually a character, but his presence is felt. So yes, in that sense, he is indeed a character.
In that sense, he is felt. Uh-huh. So I ask you, why to bring his essence into light, and maybe that is for like clarification and for recognition of his complications.
Yeah. Well, I say in the notes, and I wrote this little essay that is going to be in the program about how this relates to exactly what you said, our August 2017 incident or riots here. Mm-hmm. I guess the play was sitting on my shelf, gathering dust. It never quite succeeded as drama. But then after that, I heard that Richard Spencer was using the bell curve as rationale for
right.
his racist beliefs. And I thought, God damn, I have to pick this play up again and really try and understand and grapple with, what's going on here.
Yeah.
So to back up, I grew up in Charlottesville. Thomas Jefferson, I could see from my third floor window, I could see Monticello and in the winter, you can see the dome, and he's a deity, and you go up there, and the old, back in the 60s,
I did my humanities thesis on Thomas Jefferson architecture in Virginia, for my fall semester. So same deal.
So it's this, so over the years, I went to UVA, and all the Sally Hemings stuff started coming out.
Mm-hmm.
The major historians were all having to grapple with, oh no, Thomas Jefferson would ever sleep with a slave, and You know, it's like, wait a minute, is that worse than having slaves?
But he did. Everybody did.
Of course he did.
Yeah, of course. But you know, back then it was just, you know, the 70s. No, they just couldn't imagine. So you see this evolution of understanding about Jefferson. And so it's been this journey about how do you keep what's essential and good about Jefferson, but really also understand what was horrible. And, you know, he has these ideals that speak above who Jefferson was, because he identified that all men are created equal. So you've got to hold that in mind, but also look at, be able to dissect and understand the bad and how that shaped our history. Mm-hmm. So you can't throw it all out and just dismiss this man as a racist, rapist.
And I don't want to sound like I'm sure the play has taken different shape.
Yeah.
I just saw it as in the previous reading, I saw it to be a romanticized version of Jefferson, which is how it usually comes out to be, especially being in the state of Virginia. And like you said, being raised in the haven of Charlottesville, in which, like, you know, it's like Thomas Jefferson, Dave Matthews, and everybody else is below.
Right.
I mean, that's just the hierarchy in Charlottesville. So I I understand the mindset. I'm just, I'm wondering, do you hope to deconstruct that romanticism in this piece?
Absolutely. Well, you see the effects of slavery on his family, and you don't learn, well, the story of his family is not is not as well known. And in his family, his granddaughter was abused by her husband, and I think a lot of that abuse and alcoholism comes from the white relationship to slavery, that they were whipping and torturing, and you don't just cut that behavior off in your own family relationships. And so there was a price paid there, too, among the white slave-owning people as well. It's obviously, they're not as bad off as the enslaved. But so that's what it investigates as well, that that this is not without cost. Now, they have, you know, they have economic advantage, but there's also emotional and social and other prices to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I romanticized Jefferson by any stretch. I mean, the image that I've chosen for the play is a shot of a nickel with Monticello on it, with a tree, with tears, crying tree, but what's one of those tears is a noose. So that's imposed over Monticello, and that's my point is that that's showing in some ways what was really going on there, and maybe not at Monticello, but certainly, I mean, there might not have been an actual hanging there. There's nothing in the historical record, but Thomas Mann Randolph, who my character is based on, by the way, I act in this thing. I couldn't find that middle-aged white
pulling
man.
Pulling a Spike Lee.
Do this, so I had to step up.
Hold on. It's Charlottesville. He couldn't find a middle-aged white man.
All right.
They're all busy.
Wait. They are a-changing.
So, they're all doing other shows or something. Maybe they just did not want to be a part of this. But as a result, I am playing two roles, and this is why I have a cold right now, because I'm going in five different directions. But what was my point? Thomas, it does not romanticize it, and the historical record, Henry Weinzeck wrote an interesting book, Master of the Mountain, an excellent book, where he started off, he was going to kind of justify, or it was a neutral approach to Jefferson, and as he did the research and found out how Jefferson exploited and brutalized young black boys in his nail factory, he said, you know, he couldn't defend Jefferson anymore after that. So, but the point is that Thomas Mann Randolph, in that same book, there's an account of how he witnessed a hanging of a slave on another plantation, and he was very upset about it. And Thomas Mann Randolph, the son-in-law, later as governor, tried to introduce
legislation
to abolish slavery.
Yeah.
So it sort of investigates that tension between the son-in-law and Jefferson.
Yeah.
You know, what was going on there? If you know, Jefferson had in his earlier years introduced legislation to stop slavery, but gave it up, went to France, maybe got used to the good life, and, you know, did not want to give that up. But Thomas Mann Randolph did. So the play looks at why he was unable to to stop slavery in 1810 and when he was governor.
What do you hope to have people talking about when they walk out of Belmont Art Collective February 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th?
Well, I think I include this essay about that relates what's going on in this play to the riots of the summer of 2017. So I hope they'll get a deeper historical context for what happened there, that the men who showed up in our town, who seemed so alien to us, was not an accident, and that maybe this is a wake-up call for what's going on in our own town. And I think when you look at the historical record, you get a deeper understanding of how, okay, yeah, maybe we can see how social change can come about because of by understanding the calculated oppression that happened in the past, that in the same way we can change it. This is not something inherent in our natures, but something that is really that we can do today, that we can accomplish, because the bad stuff was accomplished in the past. We can do the same way. We can do good in the future.
Jim, I'll give you the last word. 30 seconds.
Come see the play. It's going to be great. Peter spent a lot of time working on it 12 years, so we've got something great for you guys.
12 years of play.
That's actually short for Peter to work on a play. I just want y'all to know.
Hey, we're letting everybody know at Homegrown, this stuff takes time. This stuff takes time. We can't just type something and boom, it's done. Like, I've been working on something forever. So it is what it is. Peter, Jim. Thank you all so much.
Sure. It's great to be here.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Oh, all right. I guess we're going to do these artistic events.
There's a list of stuff.
Yeah. List of stuff there's that we got to go through every time. Oh, my God.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Here are just some of your artistic events happening this week. Currently running through April 13th. The American Shakespeare Center features its 2019 American Renaissance season featuring Henry IV, Part 1, The Merry Wives of Windsor by William Shakespeare, and starting February 7th, and Paige Hates Fun, and starting March 8th, Arden of Faversham at the Blackfriars Theater in Stanton. Currently running now through February 24th, check out these local artist shows. Second Street Gallery pairs two painters with two photographers, Sharon Shapiro and Stacey Evans from McGuffey Art Center, and Russ Warren and Bill Moritz. McGuffey Arts Center observes Black History Month, you better, by celebrating Charlottesville's Black creative community. Look for work by Daryl Rose, Rose Hill, Michael A. Williams, Anthony Scott, Dina Jennings, Bolanle Adeboye, Liz Sherry Jones, Sahara Clemens, and much, much more. New City Arts, an exhibit of paintings, embroideries, and sculptures inspired by Latina women by Karina A. Monroy. Chroma Arts Project presents Laura Wooten, Spirit of Place, Landscapes, Real and Imagined. And Jennifer Esser, When Time Abstracts Truth. The Fiber and Stitch Art Collective display artistic quilts at New Dominion Bookshop. We talked with them last week. Oh, she was putting her foot in them quilts, man. It was good stuff.
It was.
All right. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Ninth. Currently running now through February 17th. I'm hearing great stuff about the show. I need to buy my tickets, so get your tickets. Don't get them before I get them at Live Arts. Today and tomorrow, The Elephant in the Room. Also something I'm getting tickets for. UVA grad student.
Yes.
Actor Priyanka Shetty. She was here last week. Last week, and it was awesome. One-person show at UVA Helms Theater. Get your tickets. It's free, so you have no excuse. February 6th, Jefferson Madison Regional Children's Librarian Glynis Welty. Welty? From the Gordon Avenue branch comes to UVA's Fralin Art Museum for Pictures and Pages, where she uses movement, songs, and even puppets to connect kids to art. February 7th, the UVA MFA reading series continues with grad students Amy Sue and Belinda Tang reading from their work at New Dominion Bookshop. Also, February 7th, Dream a Bell organizes a House of Bell takeover at Rapture. You know they lit, always featuring a meet and greet with RuPaul's Drag Race's Lane Matthews and her daughter, the Dora Thighs.
Oh my God.
What? Celebrities in the house. Yo.
Okay, we might have to attend that one.
Leslie's like,
we may have to.
My niece is a really big fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, I have to tell her. February 9th, comedian and favorite guest of the show, Winston Hodges, hosts a Valentine's installment of his comedy game show, the Winsmas Games. I hate that title. Come on. At the Southern Cafe Music Hall. It's so hard for me. And for your music options this week.
Okay. You would have to move. There we go. I can see it.
Yay.
Okay. Today, Matt Johnson plays Pippin Hill Farm and Vineyards at 1 p.m. Umberto Sales and Vincent Zorn give you the Gypsy Rumba and Latin Guitar at Glasshouse Winery. Tomorrow, the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar hosts an open mic night on February 5th. God, it's February already. I don't know what happened.
Yep.
February 5th, Eli Cook does a solo set at Dirty Nelly's. Hey, Eli, come back on the show, babe. Also on the 5th, Lewis Smith and friends at Fellini's. On the 6th, get ready for jazz, blues, and a smattering of rock and roll with LG and friends at the Whiskey Jar. Also on the 6th, the Tanya Ray Band go from classic disco to neo-soul at Rapture. On the 7th, Scott Ward at Tavern on the James. Face made for radio at the Whiskey Jar.
See, that was good.
I like that, actually. That's a good band name. Michael Ellswick and Company at Bellini's. Scuffletown at Glasshouse Winery on the 8th. Cherry Red at Dirty Nelly's on the 8th. Indie pop band Stray Fossa plays the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. DJ... Okay, it's got Dirt. Periods, but DJ
D-I-R-T.
Dirt.
No.
DJ...
D-I-R-T.
Is it?
DJ DRRT.
But it spells dirt.
DJ DRRT.
Okay. Anyway.
You have to say it like that.
Okay.
They request that you say it like that.
Okay. DJ DIRT. And DJ SG hosts the I Know What You Did Last Summer hip hop showcase featuring Lee Vanna. Ade?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ade and Tada, Loyalty, Doubleback ENT, DMV Have, and others at the Ix Art Park.
It's going down!
Apparently. I don't understand any of those names, but apparently it is. I'm old. What? I'm a grandma. I'm supposed to say that now, right? Anyway, February 9th, Alice Clare at Albemarle Cider Works, Anlar at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, the Pollux at the Batesville Market, and enjoy traditional Irish music with severed heads of Coin Pond.
At the Tin Whistle Irish Pub.
The Tyler Digg Band at the Whiskey Jar. Okay. That was all in the night.
Whoa.
Monday's list is really long.
Yo,
okay.
It's starting to get to Wacky Monday.
I know. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School, Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, Weekly Open Jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church.
So the wacky.
Where else? Mm-hmm. Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Manny Metcalf at the Bebedero, Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar, and Songwriter Night at the Local.
That's Monday.
Tuesday, we got Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar and the traditional session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub.
That's Tuesday.
Every Wednesday, Bachata Fusion at the Ix Park.
Yo, Wednesday got way less wacky.
And the Mike Rosinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Okay, every Thursday, Humberto Sales and Vincent Zorn do Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero.
Oh, snap.
And every Thursday, John Durst! At Miller's. All right. That's our list of what's going on, people. We're going to
pay every Thursday, you got to come down the dearth. This is Homegrown. We got to pay some bills. Joe Rob!
I'm Paige Naylor, local Charlottesville musician, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
94.7 WPVC. It is 34 minutes past the hour, and if you're just tuning in, it's Homegrown.
And you're late.
You're so late.
And you're late.
But that's okay.
Where have you been, young man? Where have you been? Been worried, sick. I was about to call hospitals
morgues. Daryl Rose.
Had a coughing fit.
Sorry. That's okay. Nah, man, you're good.
To dive out the door.
I'm sitting here.
Now I saw y'all chilling in the back looking like security. You know what you look like? You look like the two guys that they owed people money to.
Just
so
wait,
you're like, just wait till y'all walk out.
I could come and sit in.
Nah.
I should have gone out and got my leather jacket on for that.
Yeah, totally. Fit the world.
they're doing black. Right on. They're doing Black History Month programming here at the McGuffey Arts Center, currently running now through February 24th, which is fitting.
Yes.
It's good, y'all.
Right time.
I can't wait to see more of your art.
Well, it's been quite a ride.
I know. I'm excited. It's
very, very, this way more, okay. Yes, Bob Anderson here saw some paintings, and he called me, and he said, oh, would you like to come and participate in Black History Month? I said, well, Bob, I tentative, but I will give it a try or give it a go because I don't paint for the public so much anymore. But now it's just a big event for me, mm-hmm. just a big event, major, you know.
So how many pieces do you have?
16. I think it's 16 in a show. And we had a very, very Friday night, first Friday. People just all over the place. It was major. It was major.
Friday we've had in
it was
years.
Major.
Mm. Well, it was because of this man right here.
It was more than just alone. Me. There's a bunch more.
I will say he's one of the superstars.
Oh, yes. Bless your heart.
But y'all are just like, you know, two of like a slew of people that have participated in this. And Bob, you're the one that put this all
together.
I'm behind
the scenes, totally.
Right on. When
the artists want a break, they slip down the hall, they slide into my studio, and I give them a glass of wine. We relax there.
Right on.
That rattling sound is a candy I got in my mouth.
That's all right.
I got real bad cough. This all started after the white supremacists invaded Charlottesville mm-hmm. in August.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago. One of the artists, Gene Sampson, came up to me because we were both out marching in the middle of it all.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I just want to clarify. I don't think it was riots per se. I think it was an invasion and people came to defend the community. Continue.
These people, they were like a black cloud that came over Charlottesville, and they weren't from Charlottesville. These were outsiders for the most part. So Gene said to me, Bob, we need to do something. We need to do something to change things. So she said, let's have McGuffey turn into do something for Black History Month. Mm. I said, well, it's too early. I was too late in the year, so we'll do it a year from now, June 2019. And as the time got closer, that's what we did. And it's what it has turned into is the opposite, sort of the counterpoint to what happened here that August. Rather than the dark cloud over Charlottesville, this is the sun rising over Charlottesville.
Mm.
This is where art takes over from hatred. And art, which includes music, because we have music going on there. We have dance, music, drums,
okay,
as well as visual arts.
What?
But to me, I have a son who's a musician. And one of the things I noticed very early on, he went to a real high-end school, real smart kid. He plays music with people who come from the opposite end of the social pole, so to speak. But when they're playing music, they're on the exact same level.
Right.
They're communicating.
Matter.
It doesn't matter. And art is the same thing. If you look at me on the street, I'm one of those guys. I fit the profile of the people who voted for that. I won't name him. You know who I'm talking about, though, right?
You shall not be.
Yep.
I mean, I'm in that age group. I'm in that. They say I'm a Caucasian.
Mm.
they say. But
I like that.
I'll tell you what. My grandmother marched in the 30s for civil rights. Mm. And that's how I was brought up. And that's probably one reason why I'm not like some of these other people out there. But I felt it was my duty to be the one to pull this thing together. And I did it. One of the most exciting things is that once I started, we decided we wanted to discover new talent in our own community. So I asked everybody, who do you know? Who do you know out there who's doing stuff that nobody knows about? And we've uncovered several people. Anthony Scott is one example. He's one of the artists in our show. He's a diesel mechanic. He commutes to Richmond every day.
Mm.
He's a single father. He's got two kids at home. Comes back to his house. You go to visit him on a Saturday, his entire dining room is an art studio. And I asked him, when did you start drawing, Anthony? He said, 6 years old.
Mm.
And every time he could, he would take a class and nobody knew he was out there. Nobody knows he's an artist, but today they do. So he was at one end of the hall. The other end of the hall, some people do know this fellow. His name is J.J. Johnson. J.J. has an uncle who's an artist, Frank Walker, who's well known in the area.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Frank.
And he's completely like self-taught.
Yeah. So J.J. is following in his uncle's footsteps. But one of the cool things about J.J. and Anthony is they both went to grade school together, but they hadn't seen each other in years.
Stop it.
And here they are, one's at one end
Stop
of the hall.
Stop it.
The other's at the other end of the
and
hall.
And you know they were drawn together like
That's
back in the
awesome.
Day.
Yeah.
So now when the night was over, all the public was gone, those two guys are sitting there changing information. They're going to start drawing together. They're going to come over to McGuffey
nice.
And do our life drawing with us. I mean, to me, that was success.
That's nice.
And back to Daryl.
Not me.
I mean, everybody knows, my kids learned how to drum with Daryl. My kid's got his own kid who's in high school now, okay? So my son learned drumming with Daryl.
Whoa.
Everybody knows Daryl as a musician. Very few people knew that he was doing artwork in the back, that he's a
Look
visual
at that.
Artist.
It's right there.
And I got the shirt.
They listen to
his own artwork.
And he had a show. That is, there you go.
Ta-da.
Yeah, that's all you get. That's all you get.
How come I don't have one of those shirts?
We'll get you.
So Dale, talk about it. Like when he approached you about this, like
over the past, gosh, it's like wow, it happened so fast. I usually start painting in November every year, and then I'll paint and then paint and paint and then we'll.
Why November?
Something happens in November after the festival season. You know. Winds down for me on tour and all, mm-hmm. and out of town a lot. I'm just settled in, so no more outdoor concerts
gotcha.
Per se. So I'm painting because it just feels good and it has to come out. Mm-hmm. It has to come out. It's in the DNA. It has to come out. I am not formally trained. I've only had one art teacher in my whole life.
Right.
Gloria Mitchell, who has passed on. She was with McGuffey for a very long time, and Gloria passed. Maybe 2 years ago, and she sit me down one time when I was teaching her drumming. And she had hurt her wrist, and she couldn't drum anymore. She said, but have you ever tried to paint? I said, well, I had a dream, but I don't know anything about that. I'm, like, kind of afraid of that medium to even try to go there. She sit me down with a canvas, and she said, now paint to your music, paint to your rhythm. And that was in 1993 in Charlottesville. And since that time, I have pursued this. In the DNA on my mother's heritage by way of New Orleans with French and North African heritage, Creole. Her great-great-grandfather was a painter who stowed away from by way of France all the way to Nova Scotia, and then they say he ended up in New Orleans. He was a painter. So this is in me, and it had to come out as we were just talking about. It's there, because you mentioned earlier how the DNA is the framework, but it's there, and you tap it, it's there. And so I just a passion. And this gentleman help get it out, you know.
Looking at Daryl's art, I have a piece that I bought from him a number of years ago. And when I went over to his house about a month ago to look at what his newest
different world.
And I said, "Whoa, Daryl, when we have this show in February, it's going to be spring hitting early because you are blossoming here. The flower that is Daryl as a painter is coming out big time."
I am so mad that we have to go to a commercial right now.
I know. Right?
Yeah. Oh, man. My eyes are rolling up. All right. Bob Anderson. There was Homegrown. Drop!
Hello, my name is Diana Kim, an aspiring author, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
46 minutes past the hour, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Bob Anderson, Della Rose, putting together Black History Month for the McGuffey Arts Center. Doing a sensational job in this interview, at least.
I think.
But you... You both talk about art so transformatively. And, like, I don't want to sound cliche because I believe in acting the same way, too. It's inherent. It's like, it is like touching the heavens, so to speak. And it is like a calling that you feel like is put upon you, that you necessarily don't have a choice in doing, but you have to.
You want to maintain your blessings.
Yeah.
That's your blessing. Yeah. You have to maintain. You respect your blessings. Mm-hmm. I've had musician friends over the years who chose to be other than the musicians that they were, and they were miserable.
Yeah.
Mm.
The passion, they didn't go for it. It was like, oh, well, I have the paycheck, and I have to take care of this, and da-da-da-da, and get all that. But then the passion. So one friend went to be a prison guard, and he dropped music. Bless his heart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So just the passion. But you got to maintain your blessings
mm-hmm.
and share your blessings.
Mm. Bob, you're saying?
There's so many different artists. I think we've set it up so that I can come back here the next several Sundays and have a different artist who's in the show.
Absolutely.
Throughout the month.
That'd be great.
There are so many people who are so spectacular that the community has to know more about them.
Yeah. If you go to McGuffeyArtsCenter.com/events, they have the entire like listing for the February series. So it's a mofo. Yeah. Like, check it out. All of it looks amazing. But it sounds like you had a great time like discovering these.
Oh, to me it was. I turned to my wife the other day and I said, "You realize I haven't worked on any of my own things in 2 to 3 months now?" And I do just barely enough to scrape by on my other job so that I can pay the bills.
Right.
But other than that, it's black history. And it's getting together with all these people, meeting them, and then looking at their work, getting exciting. One guy, he'd never framed anything. So we had to find a volunteer at McGuffey to go over to his house and help him frame his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole crew of people over there who've really joined in and become volunteers to go out and help some of these people get their act together. Judy McLeod, a lot of people in the community know her. She was very instrumental. She introduced me to Michael E. Williams,
mm-hmm.
who I believe he worked for the phone company. He's retired now. And he's in the show.
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm walking down the hall in the middle of the show, and I meet this really friendly guy, and we start talking. He introduces himself, and I asked him, "Are you a friend of one of the artists?" And he said, "Yeah, Michael Williams. I've known him for years." And he smiled, and he said, "I had no idea he was an artist. But if you went to Michael's house, his basement is so full of artwork, you could hardly move.
Oh.
And it's a big basement, let me tell you. But his work is, he's one of these people, he goes around town in his free time on a bicycle and takes pictures of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
His subject matter tends to focus on the black community of Charlottesville. And his transformations of that into art, oil paintings, are just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
People's mouths are just dropping when they come in there. He has the opposite end of the hall from Daryl, and they make great counterpoint to one another. It's just just fantastic.
So why do you think that so many of these artists were working in obscurity, even from people who knew them?
Art is, to a lot of artists, I think it's a very personal thing. And like Daryl said, it's something that comes out of you. I can talk from my own experience. I realized looking back, the reason I probably got into art as much as I did, part of it was inherited, I will say that. But my parents were both alcoholics, my father especially. They used to fight. And I realized my escape was to go back into my room and draw. So I remember drawing at the age of 4. And then from then on, I couldn't help it. That's what I do. And I talked to Michael. That's what he does. He said he started drawing when he was a little kid. He took courses in high school, but nobody really paid attention. Nobody knew what he was doing. He had to have a real job. He had to take care of the family, so he went out, got a real job, goes home, and his passion, he gets back down in the basement, and he's working on his art. So many of them are like that. If you just talk to one after another, it's almost the same story across the board.
Yeah.
So for some of these artists, they're probably the McGuffey showing is probably the first time that they're having a showing, right?
Several, that's the case, yeah.
So what was it like for them?
I tell you, at the end of the show, Anthony came in my studio. he had a light in his eyes and a smile on his face that was just, it made me break down. It was just beautiful. He said, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Yeah. And, of course, he's the one who met his friend.
Right.
And he's just down the hall. And that, you know, it was just a, it was like homecoming.
Yeah. Did any of the people have any, like, hesitation in exposing their artwork? And did you have to, like...
We had to work on Michael a little bit.
Yeah.
And when you see Michael's work, you went, my God, this guy could be, he could be national.
Right.
I mean, seriously.
Thank you for sharing your art with us, because...
In fact, these two guys, if I weren't an artist and wanted to spend my time doing my art, I'd become an agent or something, and I'd get these guys, and I'd go on the road with them. I mean, they're... He's ready for the country now. He's beyond Charlottesville.
Well, I appreciate it. If I could interject now, I've been in Charlottesville since 1990 proper. The area of town where McGuffey is, was that part of Vinegar Hill, perhaps?
Yes.
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 Okay, so not by coincidence that we were coming full circle here.
Yeah.
And
there's controversy on where the
ancestral ties have come forth. For the origins to be dealt with proper. So it's not coincidental, I think, that, wait a minute, we're in Vinegar Hill and all this culture, and this is coming back to a source.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, McGuffey was a school that chose not to integrate. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the truth is going to come forth no matter how you try to suppress the truth.
Preach.
And so I'm just... Yeah. You know, I share this because I hope we all can think about this and pay attention to that.
Yeah,
I
mean,
you know,
So
you had one of your first like major public showings at the Heritage Center a couple of years ago, right?
I can't keep up anymore with all these dates. The very first show was at Mud House in 1994.
Oh wow!
And I had tremendous. I mean, it was amazing. Mm. Financially, I can't quote it over the radio, but it was amazing. But I have showed it, and this is my second time at McGuffey, third time at McGuffey. The last time at McGuffey was 3 years ago or so thereabouts. I had the major hall, the big room bar.
That's more like 5 years
ago. And I remember this. It was 25 paintings there, and I sold 23. So I'm like, whoa, okay.
I got one of them.
I'm a humble recipient of this. And just to share that information, I was thinking about Vinegar Hill, McGuffey School, and it all comes back around to the source.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, the source.
So, I mean, I have fond memories of McGuffey. It was the place before the Dodge Challenger where we saw the Nazis move away and we thought we'd won. At McGuffey Park at August 12th.
Wow.
So it was a safe space for us, and it holds a special place in my heart for me. And also, I've seen such wonderful artwork, and I've met such wonderful people. So, you know, Sam Gray, has been on here multiple times. We just met phenomenal artists with big, beautiful hearts that work. What do you think it is about McGuffey, particularly, Bob, that creates that this atmosphere of inclusion and understanding and compassion and...
Is it just
brilliance for art?
Well, there are a couple of things going on, but one is what draws me to McGuffey is the ability to just mix with other people. It's the cross-fertilization of ideas in your passions.
Yeah.
And I do collaborations with people at times, and I have with a number of people at McGuffey.
And I have 60 seconds, so I'm terribly sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. You just freaked me out. What am I going to say? 60
McGuffey,
seconds.
Everything that's
All
great
right.
about McGuffey.
McGuffey, it's a great community. The one thing that was lacking from my point of view was the diversity. And what we achieved pulling that diversity back into McGuffey. And I think there are reasons for that. We can talk about that another time.
Absolutely.
But it's certainly over now. Art, like I said, it's a level playing field. Everybody's the same. You're an artist. When I look into the eye of one of the other artists, I don't see a black person, a Chinaman, or anything else. I'm looking at an artist. And that's how we communicate. We exist on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us feel damn good.
Yeah, it's the human thing.
Yeah, definitely. Humanity is important. All right, let's wrap this up. We got to get out of here. I love you, Leslie. Love you, Clinton.
Thank you, Bob Anderson, Dale Rose.
Thank you.
Peter Gunter, Jim Witten, for being part of Homegrown. We'll be back next week.
Love you, David.
Get out of here. Stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Peace.
Peace.
You guys are brilliant.
This has been Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art here on 94.7 WPVC. Yeah, boy. We'd like to thank our guests, Peter Gunter, Tim Winton, of course, Bob Anderson, Daryl Rose. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is by Positive Collective. Right now, we're listening to Daryl Rose and the African Drum Festival. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine lisping law firm of Tochterman Overman Munson & Burke. Legal services that wrap around you like a thong. Remember to keep your dial on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We'll see you next week.
Contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.